The book of Leviticus is the book that we're going to be examining tonight by way of an overview. And the book of Leviticus, the name Leviticus itself means pertaining to the priest. Pertaining to the priest. And it was considered to be and is considered to be the handbook for the priest of the Hebrews, of the Jews. We know that Levi, one of the 12 sons of Israel, one of the 12 sons of Jacob, was chosen, his family was chosen in order to be the ones responsible for the tabernacle and eventually the temple, and that Aaron, the brother of Moses, his family of the tribe of Levi was chosen to be the priestly family. And if you remember, when the children of Israel were brought out of Egyptian bondage, God had allowed the firstborn of all the children of Israel to live, providing that the blood had been sprinkled on the doorpost and on the lintels. And thereby, God said, all the firstborn belong to me. I saved them. As a result of that, when they got into the wilderness and away from Egypt, God let it be known that he was going to make a trade. He was going to make an exchange with the children of Israel. Rather than all the firstborn belonging to him, he would set aside one tribe, the tribe of Levi, as being that which belonged to him and would be his priestly tribe. And we even have the numbering of the male, the firstborn of each family, and the numbering of the children of Levi at that particular time, and it ends up being a very close number as far as tit for tat is concerned. And so with such, God said the Levites are going to be that tribe that belongs to me. They will be my servants. And then in particular, the family of Aaron is going to be the priestly family. Aaron is going to be the first high priest of the nation of Israel, of the children of Israel. And then from Aaron, it will be passed on to the oldest male in Aaron's family. And so he will be the high priest. The rest of Aaron's family will be the regular priests, if you will, the other priests. And so with such, the Levites as a tribe were not priests, the rest of the Levites, but they were the helpers of the priests. They were the helpers of the family of Aaron in order to take care of all the things as it related to the tabernacle and then, of course, later with the temple itself. Moses is the writer of the book of Leviticus. There is no indication anywhere that Moses is not the writer and that Jesus even spoke concerning all the Pentateuch as being of Moses. And with that being the case, the Pentateuch being the first five books of the Old Testament, that wouldn't also necessarily imply that he is the writer of the book of Leviticus. The events and the instructions that are recorded in the book of Leviticus cover only 1 month. They cover from the time that the tabernacle was finished until the time that the children of Israel leave Mount Sinai. And so it was only 1 month that this book covers. And yet it is an extremely important book, even for us today. It is one that is highly neglected because of all the laws that are in this particular book. And yet it is one that has such great meaning and benefit for even those of us in New Testament times. Of course, as we have emphasized throughout this series and will throughout the remainder of it, I'm sure, that the Apostle Paul says in Romans chapter 15 and in verse 4, and whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. Therefore, God does expect us to learn these Old Testament messages. Well, when you look at the book of Exodus, what ends up being the purpose of the book, as best as we can tell? Well, first of all, God's purpose in the book is to show that, in fact, God is holy. God is holy, but man is sinful. And thereby, the book of Leviticus brings out that there must be a continual return to God for cleansing as well as for forgiveness. Man cannot do it on his own. He has to do it according to God's prescription, according to God's law. It is also intended to show how sinful people can approach a holy God, because God does not associate himself with those things that are not holy. And so how does a sinful man approach a holy God? The book of Leviticus tells us, as it relates to the children of Israel anyway. It is also intended to provide the law whereby the children of Israel could approach God in order to offer acceptable worship to God. We've emphasized at other times that in order for worship to be acceptable to God, it must be that which is authorized. The book of Leviticus is that which authorizes the worship of the Jews of Old Testament times, and therefore its purpose. It was also intended to keep Israel holy. If they would follow the book of Leviticus, keeping the laws that were contained therein, they too could be a holy people, as God wanted and as God expected them to do. Ultimately, though, the aim of the book is that all the events, all the laws that are contained therein point to the coming of the Christ. And in fact, many of the sacrifices, in fact, as we'll notice, all the sacrifices are those that actually look toward the coming of the Christ as the ultimate fulfillment, as the perfect sacrifice. And therefore, it is intended in order to point toward the coming of the Messiah. As such, Jesus will be revealed as type anyway here in the book of Leviticus as being the sin bearer, as being the great high priest through whom we have access to the Holy Father in heaven, as the Hebrew writer would bring out in Hebrews chapter 4 and Hebrews chapter 7. Well, concerning the background of the book itself, the name Leviticus comes again, as we've stated from the two previous books. The book of Leviticus, the name for the book of Leviticus, comes from the Septuagint version, the Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament scriptures. It was given that particular name because it had to do with the services of sacrifice and worship that were administered by the Levites, in particular by the priests of the tribe of Levi. The rabbis of old called the book of Leviticus the law of the priests, or the law of the offerings. And yet the Hebrews themselves noticed and recognized the book of Leviticus according to the first three Hebrew words in the book of Leviticus, which translated, say, "and the Lord called." And that's what they called the book of Leviticus. The time of the writing seems to be toward the close of the wilderness wanderings, and written almost immediately, if you will, after the book of Exodus was written. It is significant that when you begin reading Leviticus chapter 1, verse 1, the very first word in our English translations, if they're translated accordingly, is the word "and." And that is there intentionally, because the book of Leviticus follows immediately upon the heels of the book of Exodus. And in fact, it is so important and has such a close relationship with the book of Exodus that sometimes it was not even separated from the book of Exodus. It was just a continuation from what was recorded there. As far as the book itself, it is a book of laws. And there are a great number of laws here in the book of Leviticus. It contains very little historical information. And, of course, when you remember that it's only 30 days approximately, or 1 month that's covered in the book, you would not expect to have a lot of historical information necessarily in that book. It has been at various times called the Gospel of the Old Testament. The Gospel, Gospel meaning good news. The good news of the Old Testament simply because it looked to the coming of the Messiah. the coming to when the ultimate sacrifice would be offered, the perfect sacrifice, the great high priest would become available. And so with such, it was known as the Gospel of the Old Testament. It's also been called a picture book, and called that because every single sacrifice that was offered according to the laws in the book of Leviticus was a picture pointing to the true Lamb of God who would come in order to take away the sins of the world. When you think concerning the inspiration of the book, one of the things that pops out at you if you pay attention to what is recorded here is that 39 times in the book of Leviticus we will have the phrase, "And God commanded Moses, saying." Well, what is the point of inspiration? What does inspiration mean? It means God breathed, right? Coming from God. And that is the very point that's made throughout the book of Leviticus. This was not something that Moses just sat down and decided, you know, I think it'd be a good idea to give the Levites, to give the priests a bunch of rules. No, these were rules that came from God. And over again, it is emphasized in the book that these are God's laws. These are the things that God spoke and delivered to Moses. Well, with each of the books that we've gone through so far, we've tried to give you various keys concerning the book in order to help us to appreciate it a little bit better, in order to draw particular attention to certain areas of the book. The keys concerning the book of Leviticus include the key word. The key word in the book of Leviticus is that of holy, being found some 87 times in the book. It is the term that carries with it the same idea as the word sanctified. Therefore, the idea of being set apart for a particular purpose, set apart for God's purpose, is what the idea of sanctified is, and that is also the idea behind holy. Holiness, of course, in its radical meaning, and radical, we're not trying to say it's off the deep end idea, but ultimately the idea of holiness is the idea of separation. And when you think concerning the children of Israel, isn't that exactly what you have? As a result of the laws that are given to the children of Israel and to the priest here in the book of Leviticus, you have the children of Israel being separated. They are separated from other nations in the world. They are separated from the world. They are separated if they follow God's law, if they abide by the instructions that God has given, they will be separated from sin as a result of such. And thereby, being separated from the world, they are separated to God. They become His, who is holy. The laws of the book of Leviticus separated Israel from all other nations. In fact, you remember that the Apostle Paul talked about that when Jesus was crucified on the cross, the middle wall of partition was taken down. The old law was nailed to the cross. The law with its commandments, with its laws that were contained therein, was a partition between Jew and Gentile. The Gentiles were not under the law of Moses. They were not governed by the things contained in the book of Leviticus. And therefore, the Jews, the Hebrews, were separated as a result of that. But when Jesus died on the cross, nailing the old law to the cross, that middle wall of partition was taken down to where Jew and Gentile could now be one in Christ, no longer being that which was separated between them, or that which separated was no longer there. In contrast, though, to the idea of holy and holiness, the word sin and uncleanness are found in their various forms anyway 194 times in the book of Leviticus. And so you have the contrast here between holy and holiness and that which is sin and uncleanness, and more times than not, God refers to the sin and the uncleanness than He does even concerning that which is holy and that of holiness. Blood, as a means of cleansing, is referred to some 89 times, and the idea of atonement, whereby we can become one with God again, or the Jews could become one with God again, being made pure and holy, is found some 45 times in the book of Leviticus. As far as the key verses in the book of Leviticus would come from Leviticus chapter 11, verses 44 and 45, where there God says, "For I am the Lord your God. Ye shall therefore sanctify yourselves, and ye shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall ye defile yourselves with any manner of creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. For I am the Lord that bringeth you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. Ye shall therefore be holy, for I am holy." Therefore, the emphasis from the book of Leviticus concerning holiness and the children of Israel being holy, because they belong to God. They were His. Leviticus chapter 16 is described as being the key chapter of the book. The chapter of Leviticus chapter 16 deals with the Day of Atonement. The Day of Atonement that we know of today as Yom Kippur or Kippur. And it speaks concerning the Day of Atonement and the various things that were to take place. It is considered to be the most important, the most solemn day of the entire calendar as far as the Jews are concerned, because this was the one and only day that the high priest was allowed to go into the Holy of Holies, whereby he was allowed to offer sacrifice for his own sins and also for the sins of the people, so that they could be atoned and they could be holy to God. This took place on the 10th day of the 7th month of the Jewish calendar, and it was considered to be a Sabbath of solemn rest. It was the most solemn day of the year, and by the way, it was the only fast day that God required of the children of Israel. It was the only one. You remember when Jesus told concerning the Pharisee and the publican there at the wall where they were praying, and how the Pharisee talked about that he fasted 3 times in a week. Only one day a year was commanded by God in order to fast throughout the law. The key phrase found some 21 times in the book of Leviticus is, "I am the Lord your God." I am the Lord your God. God made sure that they understood that they as a people belong to Him, but He as their God reciprocated that in that He belonged to them as well. I am your God. When you look at the book of Leviticus, by way of outline anyway, it is important, it is significant in that the book of Leviticus is divided into several sections. The first 7 chapters dealing with the sacrifices that were offered. And remember, this given to the priestly tribe, that was their responsibility to offer these sacrifices, to know what the sacrifices were about, to know what they were for, to know how to go about doing it acceptably as far as God was concerned. And so beginning in Leviticus chapter 1, we read concerning the laws governing the burnt offering. In Leviticus chapter 2, the laws governing the meat or the grain offerings. And then chapter 3, concerning the laws governing the peace offering. Chapter 4 into chapter 5, dealing concerning the laws governing the sin offering. And the remainder of chapter 5 into chapter 6, the laws governing the trespass offering. It is important to also remember that in these sacrifices that were offered, that some of them were completely burned up, such as the burnt offering, when they were given to God. There was no part of that that was to be taken for themselves. But there were other sacrifices that were offered that only a part of the sacrifice was actually offered to God, and the remainder of it was either given to the priests and the priestly tribe, or it was consumed by the offerer as well as the priests, or things such as that. And so with that, all of them had to know the particulars concerning these sacrifices and know what they were for, what was the intention behind them. Those are given to us in the book of Leviticus. In chapter 6, the remainder of chapter 6, it tells concerning the process or the ritual of the burnt offering. and then the ritual of the meat or the grain offering, and then the ritual of the sin offering. And then chapter 7 gets into the ritual of the trespass offering, as well as the ritual of the peace offering. Chapter 7 also tells concerning the fat of the sacrifice, of the animal sacrifices anyway. The fat of the sacrifice always belonged to God. The fat was considered to be the most precious part, for some reason, of the sacrifice. And certainly, many times, we discard the fat of the animals that we eat, at least the biggest share of it, and maybe not as much as we should. But still, as far as the sacrifices that were offered to God, the meat, or the fat, rather, was that which was considered to be the ultimate. And it always belonged to God and was offered in sacrifice as a burnt sacrifice. But it was also stated that the blood was that which was precious, and the blood was that which was not to be consumed. It was not to be eaten. The blood belonged to God as well, as far as the sacrifices were concerned. Remember that the animal sacrifices, when they were sacrificed, they were killed. The blood was drained from those sacrifices. The blood would be used to be sprinkled on the altar, to be sprinkled on the offerer sometimes, to be sprinkled on the priest, to be sprinkled on the high priest. The blood was considered to be holy. It belonged to God, and God placed the requirements concerning it. In Leviticus chapter 8 through chapter 10, God gives laws concerning the ceremonies of consecration. Consecration concerning Aaron as the high priest, Leviticus chapter 8, as well as his sons as being the priestly tribe or the priestly family of the tribe of Levi. In Leviticus chapter 9, we have the first priestly offerings and the benedictions that are offered as Aaron begins to take his position as the high priest of the children of Israel. Chapter 10 is where we do have the record given concerning Nadab and Abihu, who were sons of Aaron, two of the four sons of Aaron, and how that they offered strange fire before the Lord, and therefore God killed them as a result of that, before all the eyes of the children of Israel, so that they would know that this was not acceptable as far as God is concerned. And then after that takes place in chapter 10, it speaks concerning the fact that the priests are prohibited from drinking wine or strong drink when they come to serve God in the tabernacle. Chapters 11 through 22, we have the putting away of uncleanness described in the book of Leviticus. There was that ceremonial uncleanness that's described in Leviticus chapters 11 through 15. Uncleanness due to touching or eating something that was unclean, whatever that may have involved. And there were certain many things that were involved in that. In chapter 12, speaks concerning uncleanness due to childbirth for mothers, as well as their purification process that they had to go through. When a mother gave birth to a male son, it took 40 days for her to become purified of that. If she gave birth to a female, to a girl, it took 80 days for her to go through the purification process. And those things are recorded in Leviticus chapter 12. Chapters 13 and 14 speak concerning the uncleanness of leprosy. And leprosy in men, leprosy in clothes, leprosy in houses. And how the priests were the ones responsible for going about determining whether or not this was a contagious leprosy or if it was just some sort of a skin ailment in some sort that was not contagious. All the particulars dealing with that are given in chapters 13 and 14. Chapter 15, uncleanness as it relates to bodily issues and purification are described in the 15th chapter. But chapter 16 and 17, they also deal with the putting away of uncleanness, but this in a general sense. Purification as it related to the Day of Atonement, to Yom Kippur. And chapter 16 speaks concerning the Day of Atonement, as we've already made mention. Chapter 17 speaks concerning the sacrifices that were offered at the door of the tabernacle in order to put away uncleanness. Chapters 18 through 20 deal with moral uncleanness as well as the punishment that was involved in those. Moral uncleanness as it related to marriage, Leviticus chapter 18. Moral uncleanness as it related to other forbidden things, Leviticus chapter 19. Chapter 20 deals with moral uncleanness as it relates to an exhortation to be holy and calls upon the children of Israel to be such. Chapters 21 through 22 deal with ceremonial and moral uncleanness of the priests, even including physical disqualifications. Just anyone could not become a priest, even of the family of Aaron. If they had any sort of blemish or defect in their body, physically speaking, they were disqualified. They could not be a priest. God would only allow those who were perfect as far as the physical was concerned in order to be his priest. And with such, in Leviticus chapter 21 and 22, he gives the strict moral requirements concerning the priest, even concerning whom they could marry, and also speaks concerning their physical situation. Leviticus chapter 23 through 25 speaks concerning the holy days and the seasons, the holy seasons. And with such, the great festivals are spoken about in Leviticus chapter 23. And in a parenthetical way, in chapter 24, speaks concerning the oil for the lamps as well as the showbread and blasphemy that was to be taken care of among the children of Israel. In chapter 25, it speaks concerning the sabbatical year, every seventh year, as well as the year of Jubilee, every 50th year. Seven Sabbaths, and then seven sabbatical years, and then the next year, the 50th year, would be the year of Jubilee. And those things that were expected, those things that were required as a result of that. In chapters 26 and 27, we have the concluding exhortations from God through Moses to the children of Israel as it relates to the priests and their obligations and how that the covenant format that God has given to the children of Israel contained both blessings and cursings, and they are enumerated there in chapter 26, or at least many of them are. And then the voluntary vows that the children of Israel made, it's emphasized in chapter 27, that they were to be redeemed. If you made a vow, God expected you to keep it. And of course, the important thing behind that was that God was saying, you be careful what you say. You be careful what you vow, because I expect you to keep it. And if you shouldn't be vowing it to start with, then you better not make the vow. And so there you have a quick outline of the book of Leviticus. There are certainly a great number of lessons that we can learn from the book of Leviticus and those things that are recorded in here. In fact, one commentator that I read made mention concerning the idea that the book of Leviticus is actually as up-to-date, as current for us today as it was for the children of Israel in old times. That in fact, the majority of the laws that are contained in the book of Leviticus are laws that govern us in one aspect or another. And several laws from the book of Leviticus at least have their principle here, and then they are elaborated on and expanded upon in the New Testament for us to be a holy people to a holy God. Lessons from the book of Leviticus. First of all, the leading thought of the book of Leviticus is the supreme importance and necessity of acceptable worship. Certainly, Leviticus chapter 10 brings that out, if no other passage does, concerning Nadab and Abihu. Also, another lesson is that all of these laws were important. Sometimes we tend to express the idea that one law is important and the other law is insignificant. Such was not the case, never has been the case, and it certainly was not the case in the book of Leviticus. All of these laws declared that sin is terrible and that only blood and death could atone for sin. And therefore, the terribleness of sin is that which is emphasized throughout the book. We can also learn from the book of Leviticus that God wants his people to be holy. God provided a way for the children of Israel to be holy, whereby he could be a part with them. He could be joined with them through the atonement. And thereby, sanctification was made available to them so that they would be a set-apart people for his purpose. We can also learn from the book of Leviticus that the second greatest commandment, remember, that Jesus talked about, to love your neighbor as yourself, is found in the book of Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 19, and in verse 18. So the book of Leviticus is where we get that second greatest commandment as Jesus spoke of it. We can also learn from the book of Leviticus that man is a creature of choice. We face all kinds of choices. We make all kinds of choices in our life. And as such, even the children of Israel, it is emphasized throughout the book that God says, if his offering be. The word if means there's a choice. It may not be this way. If it's not this way, God wouldn't accept it. And so God recognizes that the children of Israel had a choice to make. And in fact, that's the very point that Malachi is going to make, the last book of the Old Testament, because they were not making the choice of offering the best to God in their sacrifices. They were offering the disease. They were offering the lame. They were offering the that which was of no value. And as a result of that, God said, I won't accept. Give it to your governor. Here in the book of Leviticus, it is emphasized that man has a choice as to whether he will do what God wants him to do, even as it relates to his worship. We can also learn from the book of Leviticus that God has the right to command obedience because he is God and because he is holy. I am the Lord your God, 21 times in the book of Leviticus, and therefore he has the right to command. With this, we can also learn that God demands honorable conduct. He demanded it of the priest of Old Testament times, just as he demands it of us in New Testament times. We can also learn that God promises blessings for obedience, just as he did in Old Testament times, and specifically here in the book of Leviticus, so he does in New Testament times as well. We can also learn from the book of Leviticus that God warns of divine punishment for disobedience, either in this life or at least in the life to come. It is promised that there will be divine punishment for disobedience. And as such, we can also learn that God promises mercy to those who are penitent, to those who are humble and seek to follow after him in humility, living according to his law. Finally, we can learn from the book of Leviticus that if God doesn't authorize it, we need to leave it alone. We just need to forget about it. And it doesn't matter if we see anything wrong with it or not. If God doesn't authorize it, we need to leave it alone. And that certainly is brought out in the book of Leviticus. And so the book of Leviticus, it is filled with laws from cover to cover in this particular book. And yet, those Old Testament laws have many, many of them have New Testament applications. And again, as we've emphasized, if we don't really understand the Old Testament, we can't truly appreciate and understand the New Testament. And therefore, the importance of this particular study. These laws were not only to benefit their lives, the children of Israel, but they were also primarily to enable them to be together with God, who was holy. But they had to become holy. They were not holy by nature. Neither are we holy by nature. And therefore, we have to follow God's laws even today if we are going to be one with God.